being with us. You come back again next week and stay tuned for
the most exciting thing you can start a show with.
Coming live from the 2SER studios.
This is a great show.
Across the park, 2SER.
I just go for a swim, but like deep.
Come on in, meatball. Testicles.
You're pointing at the doggy.
Gummy more, more.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, no worries, hey, how good?
Which part of that was the
gummy? I've got a real problem with that.
Bloody.
Never walk alone.
I can stand the prick.
Oh, bloody bird.
Let's not do this.
Oh, the corner injury. You got a corner injury.
Hello and welcome to Across the Park, a program which is hosted by three people and listened to by the public. Because let's face it, if it were the other way around, it would be a disaster. Guess what? Joel Kasem is my name and I'm currently sitting next to some friends of mine, so I'd better introduce them as it's polite and I don't want to make things awkward. First up is a woman who this week on an Across the Park forum was voted most likely to either get gastro or coronavirus. It's Gabby Morris.
Oh.
What would you rather, gastro or coronavirus?
I mean, gastro. Oh, okay. Obviously, right? I'm probably very likely going.
You are.
I have a compromised immune system. I'm often not here, so I'm sick a lot.
Second on my list of names to read out is a man who, on the same forum, was described as the Holden of the show. It's Mick Rad.
It's because I haven't been propped up by the government enough. That's
what
why
happened there?
No, I just went bust. No on board Holdens anymore.
Okay.
It's pretty simple.
That's what happens.
Is it?
And the government didn't give them enough money. Well, they did, but then they didn't use the money to... No, I don't know.
Well described. And joining us for the first time from the Ladies' Guide to Dude Cinema, it's the very funny Alex J and Beck Charwood.
What up, what up?
Hello. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. On a sports show, film people on a sports show. I'm still trying to work that out.
Neither film people nor sports people, so it'll be fun.
But we did watch Remember the Titans once, so pretty across it, I think.
Okay,
totally.
That's all we need to know.
I don't think we brought that up as one of the films we were going to discuss.
Yeah, I think it's on there.
Is it?
Okay. What's Remember the Titans again? Is that with...
Football.
Yeah, and there's a
Denzel
coach. Yeah, and he's got like a southern accent, and he's like... Y'all gonna win the big game.
And they're like, what, coach?
Yeah, and he's like...
You know that movie.
Yeah. He's like
movie.
Firm but fair.
Not with...
Yeah.
No,
that is the one with a lot of famous people in it, I think. Like,
yeah, like Baby Ryan Reynolds is in there.
Yeah,
and
Baby Ryan Gosling.
Oh, Ryan Gosling. Oh, sorry.
Same.
Would you believe I have a movie podcast?
You wait till we start talking about sport.
Yeah. Beck has a condition we like to call actor face blindness. she
I have the opposite.
You know too many faces? That's called bragging. It's very different.
So you really have that thing where you see someone's face but they don't look like you don't remember their face?
Not medically diagnosed.
Oh. Yeah. Diagnosed on the program.
Podcast diagnosed.
Yeah.
I'm just shit with names.
I'll just look at any actor and I'm like, yeah, I know. I'll confidently say who they are.
Very confident.
And people will be like, what are you talking about?
That's what Ryan Gosling and Ryan Reynolds is. That's good.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Like, close eyes, weird face.
Exactly.
Yeah, the worst one I had was when the guy who played the T-1000 in Terminator 2, I was like, oh, that's James Dean.
He looks similar.
Famously dead for about 4 decades before the movie was made.
Could have been a hologram.
He only did 3 films, didn't he, James Dean?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah, Terminator
2 and 2 others.
He snuck back in there. He's like John Farnham, he can't quit.
There are some other people in that movie.
I was thinking Arnold Schwarzenegger. Who's in Miss Congeniality?
Sandra Bullock.
Was she in it?
No. That's a different
She's
one.
She's in a different
That's with the kid.
Football.
Yeah, different football.
The Blind Side.
Oh, the Blind Side, yeah.
That was a good
Once
one.
Again, southern, firm but fair.
Yeah. And definitely coach.
Yeah.
Always.
It's the same lines, just different actors.
Yeah.
But to us, it's the same people, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, guys, tell us about your show. Like, what you watch a movie each week.
Yes.
That's someone's face.
You say things and we'll say yes or no.
We'll guess it out. No, we have a podcast where we watch all of the movies that dudes have told us that we have to see. So me and Alex have found something in common that a lot of women seem to have is that they viciously get recommended movies throughout their lives, particularly on dates.
Yeah. As well. Or like shamed that you haven't seen a guy's favourite movie.
And it's usually something horrible like A Clockwork Orange or like There Will Be Blood or just something so not, you know, horny or fun to watch on a date whatsoever. So we go through each week and we watch one of these movies and we review it so people don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
Clever.
I love that idea, and I do realise that guys are very good at doing that because guys have this real taste for movies.
Yeah, it's a thing. I don't know what it is.
Well, taste is...
No, it isn't taste.
Hunger.
Bad taste.
Yeah. But I would argue it's the same thing now with younger generation. Like, younger generation come through and they haven't seen all these old classic movies that when I was growing up I used to love. And obviously they're probably dated like anything. So I'd try and force the kids to watch these movies that I loved, and they'll go, this is crap, what are you talking about? There's no CGI, it's shit. But similarly, guys have movies that they're passionate about for some stupid reason.
Yeah.
Maybe they just, it was the first time they had a beer or they...
Oh, totally. There's so much emotional connection.
Yeah.
Decades worth of emotional connection to a movie. And then they make us watch it on a date and then watch us watch it.
They're watching you. Have fun in that bit. It's quite good.
We're not laughing or amazed. No.
They pause it and rewind
moment.
It. You didn't laugh at that bit, so I'm just going to rewind it. You probably missed it.
And then how cranky do they get when you don't like it?
So cranky. They just get cranky mad. That we haven't seen it begin with.
Yeah. There's like, it's like, I've been living a life.
I've been watching other movies. There's other movies apart from Die Hard. Sorry.
I haven't seen Die Hard either. So
I haven't.
That's got to be an episode soon.
It's our, a big one. Yeah, we're saving it for
Christmas.
Something special.
Yeah.
Save it for Christmas.
We didn't do it for Christmas and everyone got mad at us.
Everyone got so mad.
People were like, where is it? And we're like, we're not like other podcasts. Okay. Also, did we forget about it? Yeah. Okay.
Also, people are getting mad, so that's impressive that you guys have got fans and listeners.
People get real mad. Yeah.
More actually, what we've actually found we're super surprised about, because every time we've been shamed for these movies has been so aggressive. But the people who listen to the podcast are so lovely
so nice. We have more dudes writing into us than girls saying like, I apologize, I am that guy.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to every woman in my life.
through all the movies you've done a pretty good list so far. What have you done, like 30?
No.
55 as of yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Must be movies in there you've actually gone, oh, wow, I get totally. This. I get this.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, otherwise, we would have stopped ages ago. Oh, my God, if we had it every single one.
Any stand out?
Bill and Ted. We love Bill and Ted.
Oh, Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
Freaking loved it.
Terminator.
The original? Yeah.
Both. One and two. We haven't seen the other ones. I love Star Wars. Alex
is an OG Star Wars.
Yeah, Alex unfortunately did not.
I was the newbie.
Yeah.
Like the newest.
The original trilogy we did just recently.
I wanted to go through and do the new ones as well, but for some reason she didn't want to. And I couldn't force it on her either.
That's the point. I caught you in a trap.
Yeah. I actually heard the episode you did with, it was Back to the Future, and you had Rove McManus on.
Yes.
And you asked him this question, and I'd always wondered about when he used to sign off and say
hi to your mum for me.
Yeah.
I just assumed he'd seen it in Back to the Future, and he's on this Back to the Future episode. I'm like, surely it's got to
so
come
crazy.
Up. And it did, and he's like, no, it's not from that movie.
We were so disappointed.
We watched it separately like a few days before, texted each other like, have you got up to the bit? Yeah, that's his catchphrase. Oh, my God. And he said, no, it's just a coincidence.
It's crazy, right?
Like, really? Oh, come on, just play along for the pod, mate.
Yeah, totally. do you take obviously you get recommendations all the time.
Are you going to do this right now?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, you're going to be that guy
get the list
out. You could have just DM'd us afterwards, but no, you're going to shame yourself.
Well, I think it's got to be sports related. So
okay. Well, yeah,
I've got
done
some
a lot
hot
of...
sports.
Oh,
movies.
Okay, yeah.
Some of my favorites.
Gabby, you may speak.
Yes,
be quiet.
Identified as a dude.
You are the majority today.
Have you guys seen the ultimate classic, Bend It Like Beckham?
That's
is
a good
not the
one.
Reaction that a true fan has of Bend It Like Beckham. So
I have seen it, but I remember I was very young because it came out late 90s?
2002.
I was Yeah, sorry, I was still quite young in 2002. Like... I'm sorry to rub it in.
Baby. Yeah, well, is that like your favourite movie?
Awesome. Hot girls playing soccer. Great soundtrack. So can't go wrong.
I'm in.
Keira Knightley.
She was so young then. Was that before Love Actually?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It had a really small budget and just did amazingly. Smashed it at the box office. Yeah.
Great.
And it was kind of like the really good, like, juicy representation of women playing elite sport, you know?
Very cool.
Yeah.
This was before its time.
Before its time. Another one, Blue Crush.
Is that the surfing one?
Yeah.
I've heard about that.
Guys,
is that the one where the...
You've lost Gabby now.
I'm going to be that dude and I'm going to shame him.
Is that the one that was like the heaps young actress and she's like in the waterfall and there's like a really sexy scene but she's like 16 or something?
That's Blue Lagoon.
Oh, Blue Lagoon. Well, I got halfway there. It has blue in the title.
That's Brooke Shields.
It's
It's a body of water. It's the same thing.
It's the same to us.
No, Blue Crush has got... what's her face in it? Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Don't look at... Why are you looking at Beck?
Yeah. I don't know.
We've been over this.
I don't even remember her name.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah. it's the surfing one. It's like based in Hawaii and they're like... You've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Also good. It's a little bit, as an adult when you watch it, a bit problematic, but just...
That's a lot of the movies that we watch. Yeah. People are like, it's so good. And then you realise it's been 30 years since it came out. You're like, things have changed.
Yeah, it's kind of crushing. You're just like... Oh shit!
Blue crushing.
Yeah.
Nice. Mick, did you have a favorite sports film?
No, it wasn't a sports film because I didn't.
I don't want to know your favorite movie ever.
Nobody does. Nobody is.
I'm actually struggling to think of. I've been struggling to think of the sports films that I'm really passionate about.
Happy Gilmore, I reckon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Happy Gilmore. I mean, that's huge, though.
That's a really dude-y.
Yeah,
like a
that's
real
on the list.
Yeah, for sure. It's actually not that funny.
Oh my God, really? Are you serious? Come on. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's definitely on our list, but also because I loved it growing up, I'm worried to watch it now again.
Yeah.
Like, with so many movies, we're like, we don't want to ruin it for ourselves.
Yeah. We ruin it for everyone else.
I reckon it still stands up, but Adam Sandler is such a dickhead that, you know, it's hard to look at a film with him in it and actually go, oh, this is good comedy because he's just a dickhead.
Have you watched Little Nicky? Is it Little Nicky?
No, I think that looks like the worst movie ever.
I don't know what that is.
That's the one. Oh, isn't he
the devil's son? He's the devil's son.
Yeah.
I had a weird moment the other day because I haven't seen Little Nicky in a decade and a half. And I was walking through the shops the other day and I heard this guy very loudly doing a Little Nicky impression. And I don't know what was more embarrassing, him doing the impression or me knowing that it was a Little Nicky impression.
Was he by himself?
No, he was with his friends and they were like loving it sick. They're like, so funny. I was like, what?
Such a niche.
I never, like, I've seen people do all kinds of other impressions, but... You know, Christopher
Walken. Can you
Walken,
even do it?
Michael
what is the
Caine.
Impression?
I'm not an impression person. But it was wild.
That's so funny.
What about you, Joel? Creepy. What's your favorite sports movie?
Well, I was thinking about this through the week. There's a few that I love. I love Caddyshack.
Yep.
That's huge.
I mean, that's
great.
But not the ill-fated Caddyshack 2. I don't think you should go that far.
Okay.
Because that
someone's going to make us. Now that you've said it, you set the bait.
Just say it, you can't find it.
They deleted it. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. I bet they wish they had.
Whoops.
There was Teen Wolf was another one I thought.
Is that the one with the guy from Back to the Future?
Yeah. Michael J. Fox.
Teen Wolf 2 had Jason Bateman in it, but Teen Wolf 1 was Michael J. Fox.
That's right.
Teen Wolf was sporty because of...
He played basketball
as a wolf, and then he was amazing when he was a wolf.
No spoilers, mate.
Sorry. I thought of basketball ones too, like Space Jam and White Man Can't Jump. But that's, you know, back in the 90s, there were lots of basketball films in the 90s.
Yeah.
Man, do you know Space Jam, and I only know this because I listen to other movie podcasts, was based off an ad for, like, Air Jordans?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they were just like, this ad's great. Let's make it into a whole major league.
I actually haven't watched Space Jam as an adult.
It's not good.
No.
Yeah. It doesn't look good. So you guys have been doing this for, I think, over a year now?
Just over a year.
Yeah.
Obviously loving it.
Happy anniversary, darling.
And you, my love.
Almost the same as us. We've been going just over a year as well.
Yeah, we're pretty similar. We must have started around the same time. This is cute.
We're twins.
When are you going to pop the question?
So you're both comedians, right?
Yes.
And how is that how you guys met and how you started the podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah. Definitely. And we also moved into the same suburb because we gigged together and then we moved into the same suburb and then we got drunk together once and we're like, whoops, we're best friends.
Let's make a podcast.
That's literally how it happened. And then like about a year later, we were like, let's make a podcast. Yeah. Let's make this friendship official.
Like, let's make a podcast and then go, what should we do it on? Were you like, no, we had the idea.
No, it happened
we
the other way around.
Yeah, just having like cheese and wine at my place Love one it. Night. And mm. I was seeing a guy who was obsessed with Lord of the Rings and I'd never seen it. And then I was just telling Beck, like, I felt really embarrassed that I'd never seen it. Like, I felt, like, less than human kind of thing, you know. And then Beck said that that kind of thing happens to her all the time. And then we drunkenly decided to make a podcast.
We're like, wouldn't that be a great podcast? Yeah, we're going to do it. And then
we forgot.
We told one person, I think, who we were just like, isn't this a crazy idea? And then she went and told our producer, Alexa Toliopoulos, and he's produced amazing podcasts like Finding Drago and like Total Reboot.
Legend.
Blank Slate Podcast. Mm. Amazing. Right. And he's like, no, you have to make this. So he bullied us into doing it.
Nice.
And how do you choose your guests? Are you just like, it's all dudes? Is it mostly dudes?
No. We try and have mostly women guests because dudes have been talking about movies forever.
Yeah. What we try and do is if we have a female guest, we'll watch one that she's been shamed for not seeing. If we have a male guest, we'll have one that he has shamed people for not seeing. And then we hopefully can tear it down in front of his face.
Have you had any movies like that where you've watched it with someone and been like, no, this was awful. Why did you like this movie?
Oh, we had that with Swingers. Yes. With Cameron James.
Yes.
Mm. Are you a Swingers fan?
Cam James. I'm a Cameron James fan, but I'm a Swingers fan as well because
I bet you are, mate.
It was John Favreau and Finn Vaughan.
Yeah.
And yes, it's every guy's dream, right?
It just is.
I have to look this up because I don't know it.
Yeah, no, Swingers.
It's Vegas, baby, Vegas.
You guys, there's a handy podcast that actually reviews movies that you haven't seen.
So then you don't have to watch them.
Yeah. It's called The Lady's Guide to Do.
But I'm gonna pull up Cam on that one next time I see him because that's a pretty funny movie that he telling people to watch.
Yeah. And it was fun because they had he hosts Total Reboot with Alexi, our producer, and so they had just done a Fab Fest. They'd just done a festival of reviewing all of Favreau's movies. So it worked out quite nicely.
Well, Alex, you had had one of your favourite movies ruined by Cal Wilson.
Yeah, Dumb and Dumber. He's like one of my favourite movies of
all
time.
How can you ruin something that's terrible?
Oh, my God, Mick, way to drive the knife in.
Is that Happy Gilmore? Yeah, all right, let's watch that.
Next week it's on,
and we're coming back here.
That's not a bad idea.
What did Cal do?
Oh, we were just like she had never seen it, and so I got to hear someone's perspective of seeing this movie for the first time, whereas I'd grown up with it. Yeah. Like I was the dude in that situation, and I was like, oh yeah, it has aged, hasn't it?
I heard one of your episodes. I'm not even sure which one it was, and you guys found out that you knew and you just forgotten that you had sound effects. Because that's my life. I'm all for sound effects. All those things
up there. I clocked those before. Like, how do we get them on our thing?
I can send them to you. Which one would you like to hear?
Can we hear one?
Yeah, sure.
The whoops.
How good's footy?
Wait,
how good's footy's good?
How good's footy?
Yeah, no worries. How good's footy?
So that's when we talk about football. Right. This is when we make a mistake, which is quite often.
Whoopsie daisies.
A lot of these are just Gabby.
You got Gabby Sport up there.
Gabby Sport. We haven't played this for a long time, Gabby. Do you want it?
So fun. I think this is more entertaining to us than it is to the listeners.
Sport! 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 Sport!
Stop music!
Oh my God!
Old favourite. Stop! It's too long, Joel!
Only 15 more seconds, Gab.
Oh, 15 more seconds? People are going to turn off.
They've turned off long time ago.
What? Let's do it. Look at me.
I barely have anyone on our show, Joel.
Our sound effects are not that good. We have, like, some pretty basic, like, stock ones.
Came with the material.
Yeah, because my boyfriend bought, like, a very... For my birthday, he bought me, like, a very fancy...
soundboard.
Yeah, podcasting. Yeah. It's huge. And I, like, the only thing that I know how to do on it is, like, press record.
Then there's all these other buttons like that.
And we were like, what do these other buttons do? And just...
Then we got the panel on the side and push the buttons.
And it, it wasn't us just, like, trying it in our own time. We were like, no, let's leave it on the podcast.
Perfect.
And then we put, like, 20 air horns in one episode.
There's
and people
one
were like...
episode with too many air horns.
Gavin can do it with a mouth. She's amazing.
Go
on, Gavin.
This is why you're on the soundboard. This is why you own that.
Pretty much. I'm looking at it now just going, like, this is all Gav, really.
Well, we do have some. It just happens naturally, and then he cuts it down. And
this one we never use, but that's like that's proper
yeah,
sound.
We've got that one on our
can
soundboard.
Can I make one more request?
Please do.
What's little prick?
So Mick, poor Mick was talking about getting a needle.
Of course.
He was talking about getting a needle and I cut it up to be this.
It's just a little prick.
Great.
So considering you're on our show and we are a sporting show.
Yes.
What is your relationships with sport?
Oh yeah, we used to ask this question a lot to people.
Actually, I have a very similar relationship with sports and movies. Like I've never been into sports, never watched them, and I've always been shamed for it. Actually, that's my whole history. But I've always, in younger years, I pretended to like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
From Newcastle, at one point in my teenage years, I learned all the names of the Knights.
Of course.
And that's where it stopped.
Chief Harrigan.
Did you get lots of kisses for doing that?
I did.
Being in Newcastle, you would have met the Knights. I would have been hanging out at the clubs and stuff.
Yeah, me and all of them. Andrew Johns, I know that one.
Yeah.
Andrew is...
Andrew Johns, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a Knight.
I turned to you. And I was like, I thought he was a radio personality.
Is he radio?
TV.
He
does,
TV.
Yeah, he definitely does TV. TV stuff. Oh, like footy show and all that.
So he was a footy guy before that.
He was like the big one.
Right.
It was all about him.
Yeah.
What about you, Beck?
No,
why do we get these people on? What are these choices?
Checked you.
My brothers played AFL when I was growing up and I wasn't allowed to, even though I desperately wanted to.
Oh, and now there's a league.
Instead, I had to do ballet, but I was like really good at it or whatever. Now I'm like really flexible as an adult. I'm like, oh, who cares? Text me. Okay. But the only sport I've ever really gotten into was when I was living in Perth. I really got into the local wrestling scene.
Oh, really?
Wow. I was not expecting that.
How good's wrestling?
What does that even mean?
Yeah. Like, so they have this thing called...
Perth local wrestling scene like?
Well, I was... Because I used to be a personal trainer. Whoa. No.
That's
very sporty.
Sporty.
Is it a sport?
What else did you do?
I think
sporty than anything.
Oh, don't bait me like this.
It's a sport.
No, it's not
a
sport.
What
is it? I used to be a Zumba instructor.
Yeah.
Hit the jackpot, William. Hit the jackpot. Oh,
remember when Zumba was a thing?
Can you please just
I sure do.
What is a Zumba move? Like the classic? Is it a lot of hip movement?
A lot of
shoulders.
Hips. It's like if you took like salsa, reggaeton, merengue and you put it in a blender and then just poured it out for white people to ruin in community centres across Australia. It's, yeah.
Wait, did you have like the Madonna mic and you were like, one, two. Like,
oh, I wish it was that fancy. No, I just yelled really loud. And you know what the most off-putting thing was? I was 16 years old. So like as if...
Oh my God.
As if I needed to work out in the first place. Just me, like tiny little me, like skinny as hell, and these like middle-aged women. I'm like, it's easy, guys, let's go.
They're like,
yeah. And twerk. They're like, shut up.
Oh my God.
Beck, you've done more than the three of us together.
Serious,
I've lived
this
life.
Is your show now.
Yeah.
We'll go.
But when I was working as a personal trainer, I worked with a guy who was like, I'm a professional wrestler. And I was like, there's no way I'd ever. And for years.
Wait, sorry.
He would. So
wait, are you 16 still at this age?
I thought you said
training.
Now. I was like, no.
Thank you. Said you were young. No, you were training a semi-professional wrestler.
No. So I was a Zumba instructor and then I worked as a personal trainer till I was about 20. And when I was like about 19, I was working with another personal trainer who was also professional wrestler. And he kept inviting me to the shows. And I was like, no, like, not into, I can't imagine it. And I went one time and I was like, this is the best thing I have ever seen in my life. It combines, like, extreme physical fitness with, like, choreography, with, like, acting as well, and drama, and, like, comedy. And it's, like, you get, like, $3 hot dogs. And, like, they just pull beers out of an esky that are, like, $4 in, like, a community set. And there's kids on the sidelines just being, like, rip his face off. Like, this is amazing.
So you got into wrestling. You became a character? Like, you...
No, I was purely a spectator.
But you got into it as in, like...
I think if I'd stayed in Perth longer, I probably would have started. When comedy doesn't work out, I reckon it's definitely a possibility.
Something to fall back on. There must have been some great names. Yeah. Do you remember any?
Oh, the one that I remember most is Mr. Juicy.
Oh, yeah. That's Mick. Yeah.
What?
I don't know.
And he was just this really big guy who would, like, he would just grease himself up and then just come out and people would, like, throw plates of food at him. And, like, and he'd be rubbing up on himself, just like, Mr. Juicy. It's so funny.
I do love wrestling. I mean, I was a massive WWE fan back in the day.
Yeah,
but,
nice.
You know, it's sports, and they call it sports entertainment because it's not really sport. It's all rigged, obviously. It's all set up. But you're right about the physical capability you've got to have to do it is ridiculous. And they're throwing themselves off things and they're hurting themselves all the bloody time.
Gymnastics is a sport, right? Same thing. Yeah. Choreography.
Yeah.
Wrestling's better.
Ribbons.
Ribbons. Throwing food on yourself. Yeah. Same thing.
All right. Should we try and play a game? So normally we play a game on this show when we get to the end of the show. That's how we know it's the end. All right. Should we try one? Gab, you want me? Okay, I'll do it. It sounds like what I'm doing it today. Let me find it because it's here somewhere. There it is. All right. A crossover between both our shows. So, yeah.
That's all you have.
If this is movie facts and sports facts, it's not going to go well.
I forfeit.
It's sports in movies and movies in sports.
Okay.
Oh.
Although I don't think I ever got any movies in sport. Doesn't matter.
All right.
So, so most weeks I do the game and these two give it to me for either rewriting questions that I'd done previously
or totally shit questions.
They're about darts or something.
Don't expect anything.
Okay.
No, expect something, because this week I actually went to effort.
No, but that's really bad, because now...
Oh, yeah, lower the bar, Joel, the bar. It's going to be shit. Okay. So, just jump in.
Okay. All right.
If you know the answer.
No, that's the official. You say your name.
Oh, okay.
Then you get to answer.
Cool. Okay, thank you, Gabby.
Well done, Gabby. In the film Castaway, Tom Hanks' character, who I can't actually remember the name of the character. Is anyone?
No. No, that's not a question, is
Castaway?
Yeah, Mr. Castaway.
Mr. Castaway. Gain some respect.
He finds a ball and names it Wilson.
Gabby.
Everyone remembers that. Okay, go,
question.
Go on, Gab.
It's a volleyball. Smart ass.
It is a volleyball. Well done.
I never win at this game.
Jeez. Oh, yay.
It's important that I try my hardest.
Chariots of Fire is a film about the Olympics. I've not seen it, so.
No, neither. Have you guys?
No.
It's quite an old film.
I think someone has an unfair advantage.
Okay. Everyone but Mick, which city is the Olympics at the end of the movie? Do you know what, Mick?
Okay, Alex. Greece?
Thank you for putting up your hand. No, but it is in that area.
Rome. Gabby. Fuck.
All of those things you said were wrong, Gabby.
Okay. Beck. Croatia?
No, we're getting further.
Did you say city or country?
Did I? I don't know. What is
Paris.
That? It is Paris, yeah.
Heck.
I would have accepted France. Dun, 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 you can keep going with that if you like. We'll do one more. Which one should I do? Which sport? Which sport is the film Downhill Racer about? I've never seen it.
What?
Yeah.
Go-karting. Gabby, fuck, sorry. I'm rule, though.
Like, we have this
Billy Carts.
Billy Carts.
You know?
No.
Oh, no.
Beck. Soap boxes?
That's the same thing.
I don't know that.
Alex, tobogganing? Yes.
Oh, I think we already had the answer.
Oh, we did? What was the answer?
Skiing.
I didn't hear that.
It's good that you kept guessing.
Yeah.
Who said skiing?
Mick, did you say?
Yeah, I did.
Did you know it? Well, had you seen it?
Well, I just guessed.
Oh, that's good guessing. I guess it had to be something downhill, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like this show. All right, well, I think...
Thank you.
I think we have to end it there,
ladies,
yeah.
so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, before you go, anything you want to plug? Shows coming up yourselves, solo shows, what do you got going on?
Oh, yes. We've both got solo shows coming up at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival and Sydney Comedy Festival.
Hey, ooh. That's exciting.
In a March through May.
Yeah, tickets are available.
Very available. Very. So my name's Alex J and my show's called No Sorry You Go.
And my name is Beck Choward and my show's called Dirty Girl. My mum does not like it. Oh, and of course, you have to listen to the podcast now.
Yes. Please listen to the podcast. Once you finish this episode, listen to their podcast. It's so funny. It's so great. They've had so many good guests.
I think this episode's going to be gay.
Zap! Open your purr. Gay rights!
Let's go! Let's go, lesbians! Let's go!
You're listening to It's a Gay Area with Ruby and Patrick. Buckle up, bitch.
Hello, you are in fact listening to It's a Gay Area on 2SCR 107.3. My name is Ruby Innes and unfortunately Patrick isn't here, but I have the lovely Silvio with me tonight.
Hello, hello.
Silvio will be co-hosting with me. Very, very exciting stuff.
Always exciting to
be with you. It's always exciting and how... to be with me.
Yeah, spice it up. I like that new intro, though. Was it a bit of Rosa in there that I heard?
We had a bit of Billy Eichner. And a bit of...
Open your purse.
I do love Rosa.
Yeah, we do.
She's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I live for it. And you know, all the collaborations she's doing. Mm. It's amazing. I live for it and I love it. And it's very, very good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Falling down the hole that is TikTok, I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
That much. I'm definitely becoming one of those people that I was like, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to watch it.
No.
And
no.
Now here I am with a profile, spending 4 hours on TikTok a day, trying to make it... an income from it, but it's not going to happen because I think my most recent video got like 10 views.
That's 10 people watching. So that's pretty exciting.
It's probably
exciting.
One person watching it 10 times.
That could also be a possibility. Yeah. My sister told me the other day that she's TikTok famous.
She's
15 years old.
Wow.
And like
can I do a collab with her?
You probably could.
Interesting.
And I've done a collab with her before.
Oh, wow.
I don't have an official TikTok where I'm making content. I use it purely to watch. But we collabed once and she said, yeah, it's like the least amount of views I've ever gotten. I was like, that's rough. I get it, you know?
Understandable.
I understand. Yeah. But yeah, so we got a fantastic show today. We will once again be covering another queer thinking event, the Big D, Data and the Marginalized, and we will be joined. I'm thinking about the Big D. We will be joined by Dr. Louise Boone Quo, aka Leroy, and Gallivanting. And it's going to be a great show.
It's going to be a great show.
But before that, we're going to play a little bit of music. This first track comes from Ali X and Mitski. It's a new track from them called Susie, Save Your Love. You're listening to It's a Gay Area on 2SCR 107.3. This is Susie, Save Your Love by Ali X and Mitski.
Susie needs a ride. She's way too drunk to drive, but oh, she's such a sight to see. Marsha is the problem. She's been trying to solve him. Someone needs to set her free. Oh no, she's waiting for no one.
That was Chasing Rainbows featuring Kesha by Big Frida. And you are, in fact, listening to It's a Gay Area on 2SER 107.3 with me, Ruby Innes.
And your neighborhood Spider-Man, Sylvia.
I love that.
Thank you. I was trying to think of something do with wrestling or something like that, but I couldn't think of anything too quick, so that's all that came out of my mouth.
It's kind of like wrestling. And we are now joined by the ever so lovely Dr. Louise Boone aka Leroy, and Gala Vanting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Oh, our pleasure. Now, so you are both on the Big D, Data and the Marginalised. So what exactly is the panel going to be covering?
Well, the idea of the panel is really to, you know, the starting point is that there's been lots of discussions around whether visibility equals acceptance, whether visibility promotes equality. And so we're looking at the other side of data, I guess, where visibility can involve risks, and looking at the way that the ethics around data collection, data use, collation, etc., and surveillance. So there's going to be three talks. One, Ellen van Nieuwen talking about Aboriginal data sovereignty.
And I'll be talking, so my name's Scarlett, and I'll be talking about sex workers, surveillance, and the sort of erasure of sex work online.
And I'll be talking about the surveillance of people crossing borders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. And I guess why do you think these topics are all so important to have a conversation about, especially now, I guess, in this digital age?
I mean, I think that we all of us embraced the internet as queer people as a space to express ourselves, to self-actualize, to be loud and out and proud, and I think in so doing, we've also handed over a lot of a lot of our data, which is a commodity at this point, and I think that, you know, we're all kind of having second thoughts about that, and we're having them in the context of I guess people who are already marginalized and whose data is perhaps more likely to be used against them. You know, if I think about something like my health record, for example, you know, lots of queer people had a real problem with that. Lots of sex workers had a real problem with that. HIV positive people, you know, the list goes on. And, you know, so we're going to unpack some of those things because we think it's important for queer people to think about this and to behave critically online. Not that they're not already doing that. I mean, a lot of gays hate Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I realized the other day that I do not post on Facebook, like, at all.
Yeah, I just feel like Facebook has just become an easy way for me to be like, okay, these are the people that I know, but they're never going to hear me say anything. Like, my deep, darkest thoughts are either hidden on Tumblr or shouted on Twitter, and I feel like that's still not a healthy thing to do, but growing up in this day and age as a 20-year-old male, I feel like that's what I've just grown accustomed to.
Yeah, of course.
At least your thoughts are still on Tumblr. Sex workers got kicked off Tumblr like six months ago,
exactly.
And all of our thoughts went with it.
Yeah.
Now, we've been speaking about the negative effects over surveillance over marginalized groups, so even the stuff with, like, the my health records and everything, that was something that, like, was quite terrifying for me, because even though I am quite privileged as, like, a white male, the only thing about that is that I'm gay, but still to have all of my information saved up on one particular hub, for that to concern me, I imagine for people that are in much more marginalized situations, it would be quite more considerable and have more of an impact on them.
So would you be able to give us a bit more of an overview on some of, like, the bigger points when it does come to the, I guess, negative effects of over-surveillance of marginalised groups? Big question.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's one of the things with this topic is it's so huge, you know, and it's so encompassing. And often when people are thinking about data and surveillance, it feels like so insurmountable as to how to address and how to resist this new form of governance. But certainly at the border, there's a moment when in border crossing when people... Well, let me take a step back. One of the things I'm going to be discussing is the way in which border surveillance affects the exposure of queer people to violence. So... you know, as most people, I think, know, that Australia's border policing practices are extremely harsh, and they start when people apply for a visa outside the country. And at that point, big data algorithms calculate the risk that that person might seek asylum. And as you may also know, there's 8 countries that the International Lesbian, Gay and Trans and Intersex Organization has reported currently use the death penalty against homosexuality and a further number who have it on the books, and a whole lot of about 73 countries in which consensual same sex is illegal. So what we're talking about when we're preventing people and closing the border against people on the risk that they might seek asylum in Australia is exposing queer people to violence. And that's happening through data compilations that categorically see some people as illegitimate travellers.
And I think one of the things, you know, one of the important pieces there is criminality, right? So when we make something criminal, we make it more difficult or more dangerous, and people who are criminalized for whatever thing have a harder time moving across borders, have a harder time kind of conducting the daily business of their lives, and are also more susceptible to surveillance because a crime is taking place in their existence. So I think that will probably also come up quite a bit in the event, our criminal status as queer people, as sex workers, as HIV positive people, the default criminality of being Aboriginal in Australia, these things make us extremely vulnerable when it comes to surveillance.
Absolutely, and I guess as we mentioned a little bit before, over surveillance is a prominent issue as well. Visibility through data is quite important for queer people. So how do we exactly balance the two,
Go analog. Yeah. Get a BlackBerry that doesn't have any, that has no 4G.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you hit on the point, which is it's not data collection per se that is necessarily oppressive. It's the way that it's used in a social and political context. And the social and political context that we live in is white supremacy. Mm. And so, and that's not just, like an emotional plea. It's actually here we are right now on land that was stolen, that hasn't been returned. And we live in a legal system where property rights respect and recognise white possession to property, but reject and deny Indigenous sovereignty. Mm. And so it's a really material and legal system of white supremacy. And so what that means for data collection is that it's, in some circumstances where people have control over their data and there's consent and it's used in ways that are collectively managed, it can be a really positive thing. Mm. So with addressing health issues collectively, but where people don't have control over their data, where data's been taken without consent, and where it's used to regulate access to entitlements, access to mobility, that's when we see how it plays out in really racialized ways, in gendered ways, and in ways that, in all the ways. I mean, yeah. It sounds like a shopping list, but, that's one of the difficulties with data is that it creates new subjects of suspicion as well that have very intersecting identities. And so sexuality, the type of work people do, the country a person comes from, many things go into that package of risk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, to kind of oversimplify what is a very complicated topic, do you see the positives of an increase in data on marginalised people potentially outweighing the negatives of over-surveillance? Like, is that ever going to be a possibility, I guess?
The positives outweighing the negatives? Is that what you...
Yeah, I guess so.
I do see, obviously there's circumstances where, we were kind of alluding to before, that data collecting does help. Like, it helps us see particular what environments need to be improved on, like what sectors of healthcare need to be improved on. But then I feel like it will be a situational type of environment where it depends on the person and the organizations that get that data, they're able to regulate it. But how do we get to a standpoint where that data collecting actually overcomes the negatives of surveillance over that data? And how do we make sure that it's being used in the proper way?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that the data is owned by the community that it is about, and also that it's collected in ways that are co-created with those communities, and also with an aim an aim that is explicit to them. Even if we don't know what the end point is going to be, we know what the purpose of the study is, for example. And I think that there are great examples of that in sex work research, where, you know, community level, you know, and peer-based research has produced incredible results that just aren't possible in this sort of imperialist, top-down sort of data collection and management kind of mode.
And some really, you know, principles that come out of, from what I've read about, you know, sex worker research and Aboriginal-led research, is that the data needs to be relevant to the communities, and so that requires co-creation of what questions are going to be raised. Data collection must be done in a respectful manner, and again, that means with community and part of community. There must be reciprocity. so that it is in order to benefit the community as the community has defined what that benefit would look like.
And I think also we exist now in a space where data is for profit. You know, and there is always, I guess, anytime there's that imperative, you're making compromises somewhere else, most likely. And you know, I think that's maybe that's a bit of a wider context that's kind of outside of just the academic research space, and expands out into just like the general world we live in. But I guess, you know, as long as data is this commodity, and we're trading it in this capitalist economy, I think we're going to have these questions continue to come up. These ethical challenges.
Absolutely. I mean, you said data is for profit. I mean, everything's for profit in this, like, capitalist hellscape, right?
I'm for profit.
You've been critical of Sesta Foster in the past. I mean, in my personal opinion, makes sense that you're critical about it. And, you know, while a blanket bill like these, which are you know, anti-sex, have kind of seen more harm to consensual sex workers than the protection of those being trafficked. Like, with Sesta Foster, do you honestly think there's any way where there could be a middle ground that would benefit both sides?
You're doing a spoiler on my talk.
Oh, no, sorry.
So, I mean, I think that sex trafficking and sex work are sort of two parts of the same conversation about labor under white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, right? Whilst they are distinct, there is space in between. You know, there's movement in between them. There's gray space, and we can never have a single solution that's going to address, you know, either of those things or the gray space in between. And I guess this is why I'm sort of calling for calling for community participation in these things, calling for laws not to be made about us without consultation with us. And I think there's, you know, yes, it's perfectly possible to have a nuanced approach to any kind of labor trafficking and not completely wipe out the industry. And I think that we've seen evidence of that with anti-trafficking campaigns in other industries. There's something specific to sex and sex trafficking and so-called sex slavery that has this extra sort of moral component to it, and where a sort of conscience vote is being taken rather than an evidence-based approach. But, you know, in order to take an evidence-based approach, you also need evidence. And it's not as though anybody has jumped at the opportunity to study the effects of Foster Sesta on sex workers other than sex workers themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that definitely seems like the case. They didn't put any kind of thought into it, just jumped right in.
There's definitely no consultation with sex workers, but there was also just a lot of rejection of really powerful, strong sex worker voices in lobbying, and that was on the whole ignored. There's definitely some progress being made now in terms of trying to get that piece of legislation repealed, but that's a long road.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been really, really great having you on the show. How can people go to your panel?
Buy a ticket.
Amazing. Well, yeah, when is it? Where is it?
It's at the Seymour Centre on Sunday at 4:30 till 6 p.m.
Amazing.
At the end of a very long, amazing weekend of incredible speakers.
Yeah.
The whole festival, it's about why prison abolition is a queer issue, looking at... Oh, yes, there's so many
how to, great things. I think my favourite one is how to work with people that you don't like.
Yes, I thought, that's a helpful one for everybody.
Yeah. Literally everybody... Mm.
I've never been more attacked by a title of a speech.
They just get you up on stage. It's like, do you have trouble working with Sylvia?
All the time.
No, you're amazing. You're amazing, Sylvia. Thank you so much for joining us again. I really can't stress enough how great it was having you on the show tonight. Mm.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, you can buy tickets to the Queer Thinking events, for example, The Big D, Data and the Marginalised, on the Seymour Centre website. It's happening this Sunday from 4 to 6, and you can buy your tickets then. Unfortunately, we got to go.
Unbelievable.
It's very sad to hear, but thank you so much for joining us. Big thank you to Louise, a.k.a. Leroy, and Gala for joining us on the show tonight. It was truly fantastic, and we're going to play ourselves out.
Yes.
My name's Ruby Innes.
And I'm your, I can't think of something this time, your neighbourhood butterfly, Sylvia.
Oh, I love that. We're going to play a track from Vincent, and it is called Save Myself. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a beautiful night.
Here we are, you're staring at me teary-eyed. I think it's time you said it. I swear you won't regret it. Damn, I'm glad you said it. Listen, then maybe we could fix this. I'm so happy that you're here, and I can see that you really understand that I need you here with me, but you don't have to say a word. I'll save myself. Not asking for devotion, I just need you to care. Not asking for nirvana, I just want you to be there. Just cause I'm crying rivers don't mean I'm asking for help. Feel the same. How does that sound, babe? How